Can't see my writing. All right. Hello and welcome to Chemically Speaking, a podcast where we speak to experts and passionate chemists about their respective fields. We discuss common misconceptions and trending topics. I am your host, Emma McGee. Our first guest is Griffin. You're staring at me.
I'm looking at the wall. Okay.
Our first guest is Griffin LaChapelle, my good friend and also currently a PhD chemistry student in Professor David Emsley's group. So Griffin studies synthetic inorganic chemistry, focusing on transition metal complexes bearing Lewis acid ligands. Did I get that?
Yeah.
Okay. You're the recipient of the Canadian National Scholarship called NSERC CGSM for master's students. You're the Ontario Graduate Scholarship Recipient. Oops. OGS, that's mm-hmm. what that one's called. And the NSERC CGSD for doctoral students. You're also the winner of a variety of awards, including the Robin Cox Memorial Award, which is awarded to a graduate student in the Department of Chemistry and Chemical Biology here at McMaster by recommendation of the chair for demonstrating academic excellence and who exhibits dedication, leadership, and passion in their role as a teaching assistant. I did not know you won that award.
Yeah, that was fairly recent, so yeah.
Congrats.
Thank you.
Could you explain a little bit about your research, and then we'll talk a bit more about chemical education?
Sure. So you sort of briefly touched on it there. You good? You briefly touched on it there, talking about transition metal chemistry with Lewis acidic ligands. So basically, a majority of the time with coordination chemistry, we consider the donation of electron density from the ligands to the metal center.
So like for viewers who might not have any chemistry background.
Oh, okay.
Can we talk about like...
Think about it like this. The complexes that I work with can be considered as sandwiches, where the meat of that sandwich is a metal, and we have what are called ligands, which are either atoms or molecules that surround the metal, bond to the metal.
Okay.
And the sort of what we call ligands in our case could either be the buns or the toppings of that sandwich complex. Essentially, what I'm trying to do is put toppings that have been never put on a titanium sandwich before.
Okay.
Yeah.
So the titanium is like the Montreal smoked meat.
Exactly.
Oh, yeah. Cool.
Yeah.
It's my favorite sandwich.
Yeah.
So that's pretty cool. All right. So the next thing I want to talk to you about is student success in academics, because I think that's something you're passionate about.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to start with stress for high school students and undergraduate students on succeeding.
Mm-hmm.
And specifically, what does success actually mean in high school and post-secondary education?
Ooh, okay, damn, diving right into it. Okay.
Right on it.
So I've been part of several mentorship circles. That was both in high school as well as the chemistry mentorship circle. I've been a part of that for 5 or 6 years now. Big problem that I'm seeing, especially in recent years, with the sort of what is being called a competitive grade point average going up and up and up, more and more students just care about getting a higher grade point average than actually learning the material.
Yeah.
So when you say, you know, what is the definition of success, I would argue better understanding of the material, being able to apply that material, is more important than a higher grade point average. Now, in all these mentorship circles, I always tell them, don't worry about your grade point average.
Mm-hmm.
But everyone's like, oh, that's hypocritical because you worried about your grade point average. And I'm like, yes, true. But now I'm here in my PhD. And I promise you, it is not worth the stress and anxiety to get that perfect grade point average.
That's a good point. I definitely agree with you because I found, like, when I was in high school, all I cared about was high marks. Like, if I got below a 90, I would be upset.
Yeah, same.
That's just, that was detrimental to me. And then in university, if I got above like a 70, I was like euphoric.
Right.
Like, this is fantastic.
Yeah.
But I found like even being in the lab, the students that we see most successful are the ones who actually understand it and don't necessarily have the right average. The next thing I want to ask you about is the importance of reputation for undergraduate students, because I think people kind of, they don't necessarily consider like, oh, if I'm a first-year student in a class of, you know, 1,000 students, I'm a nobody, and so I don't have to, not necessarily behave properly, but we see some students who really stand out.
Yeah.
So, yeah, what's your take on that?
I think that can go two ways. One is your reputation amongst your peers. Second is the reputation amongst your TAs, professors, whatever. Let's start with reputation amongst your peers. Good example, in second year, we have the Inquiry for Chemistry course, Chem 2 QO3. If you start off that class as being one of the students who does not contribute to a group project, that will bleed into all of your other courses in the sense of like, you know, Stephen doesn't do his work, right? You don't want to be known as the person that doesn't carry their own weight. So in terms of your reputation amongst your peers, you want to be someone that's reliable, someone that people can count on, and someone that does their work on time. With regards to reputation amongst TAs and professors and whatnot, students who are in third year, maybe even entering fourth year, are considering things such as research positions, teaching assistantships, things like that. As soon as you apply to a research group or even as a teaching assistant, the hiring manager, the PI, or whoever goes to the current TAs, they go to the current graduate students and they say, hey, tell me about Stephen. You know, are they hardworking? Are they dedicated? Do they pay attention? Do they ask good questions? How do they communicate their ideas? So even if you're in a class of like 100 students, take the extra time, talk to your TA, you know, ask them about their research, talk to the professor, because it's just getting your foot in the door that can make a huge difference down the line.
Yeah, I definitely agree. Like, I mean, you have some undergrads in your lab right now. Mm-hmm. So do we. And they were basically vetted for their positions.
Yeah.
And they might not think they were because they're just, you know, second years and they're not thinking too much about that. But really, TAs are basically like little spies.
Yeah, pretty much.
Report back to their supervisor. And yeah, it's pretty important. Looking back on it now, as a PhD student, is there anything that you would have changed?
Yes.
Okay.
I tell everyone to work hard and work as hard as you can. I'm a firm believer you should not wake up every morning to be average. You should wake up every morning, try your hardest. If you try your hardest and you get a 70, that's the best you could do. Okay?
Can't be sad with that.
With that being said, I spent way too much time trying to perfect everything in undergrad to the point of from 6 a.m. in the morning to practically midnight or 1 o'clock every single night.
Jesus.
Doing practice, doing everything I could to be perfect. Granted, I'm, you know, reaping the rewards of that now, but you sacrifice things. You sacrifice time with your friends. You sacrifice relationship, time with your family, things like that. Yeah. So if I could go back and do it, I still would have done my best, but, you know, try to focus on other things too, because school and chemistry isn't everything. It's important, but I think I made it my sole purpose at the time.
That's fair.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, it's kind of unfortunate when you see students who are just, you know, stressing about something and you're just like, yeah, there's no, I mean, there's reason to be stressed. Like, it shows you care and you're going to do well, probably, maybe, hopefully. But at the end of the day, it's not productive for anyone.
Exactly.
Yeah. You care a lot about student success. I mean, you're a tutor for you know, independent students, mentorship circles, TA.
I care a lot about people reaching their potential.
Okay.
Oftentimes, you know, I've been in a mentorship circle and someone will be like, you know, I have this elective or whatever, or I have this class that I don't really like and, you know, I'm getting a 50 in it. It's like, well, even if it isn't a class you like, you should still try your best, right? And I've seen it before, especially in kids that I've tutored and kids that I've mentored, is just not reaching their full potential. Now, for me, I think I could attribute me trying to reach my full potential to probably three people. That probably came at three very critical points in my life.
Okay.
In elementary school, it was my basketball coach. Mr. Collinson used to go around to our teachers and be like, what is this person getting in this class? And I used to be like, Mr. C, like, why do you care what I'm getting in art class? Or Mr. C, why do you care what I'm getting in math class? Yeah. And the truth is, I was getting 60s in all my classes, probably up until grade 8. And then, you know, in like a practice or whatever, he was like, yeah, you know, you got to do better. And I was like, we're talking about basketball here. You know what I mean? But it was from that point on that I started to realize that I wasn't reaching my full potential, because in grade 7, I was in a split class with like maybe 7 or 8 other grade 7s. Yeah. And I was like the only kid who didn't get honors in excellence. There's maybe one other kid. But I was, wow. And I just remember at that ceremony being like one of the few kids not being called. I was like, damn, okay. So then from there, going into high school, that's when I actually tried. Mm-hmm. But the thing is, you know, you can try really hard in a subject that you don't like. You're going to have a miserable time doing it.
Yeah.
Right? So I needed to find something I was passionate about. And truthfully, I thought I was going to do physics, but that's where the second sort of important person or role model or influence in my life came, and that was Mr. Giannotti. He was my high school chemistry teacher, and he taught me about passion. So at that point, it's like, okay, I had the drive. I knew I could reach my full potential, but I needed to figure out what exactly I needed to put that towards. Then I saw his passion. I don't remember exact – oh, that's not true. I do know exactly what it was. There was a concept that I didn't understand. It was this idea of energy levels being quantized, meaning that they can only be discrete. Mm-hmm. So it's either here or there. It can't be in the middle. And I was like, Mr. G, I don't understand. Like, how is that possible? And he's like, well, look at this. Right now I'm standing on the floor. This is my energy level 0. And then he just jumped up onto the desk. You know, he's like 55 or something, but just full-blown vertical right on the desk. And he's like, look, this is my second energy level. He's like, I'm either on the ground or I'm either on the desk. I can't be in between. So one, it made sense to me when he explained it like that. But two, just seeing the way he described chemistry made it fun for me. So that's where I got into chemistry.
Okay.
Now the third person.
I have a similar. I got to talk about my high school chemistry teacher in a minute. But
yeah.
We'll go on.
A good teacher can make all the difference for a student.
Huge. Yeah.
Third person that made sort of a big impact on me was now at the next level when I got to university. So during high school, Mr. Giannotti used to tell me about a professor at McMaster who used to do all this crazy chemistry with noble gases and fluorine and whatnot. And at the end of the first year, at the second year, like chemistry, you know, meet and greet, whatever. So first years can meet people in the chemistry department.
Trouble, Jim?
Yeah, I ended up talking to someone, not knowing who it was at first. And he was like, oh, I'm Gary Schrobelgen. And I was like, wait, Gary Schrobelgen? You taught my high school teacher. And he actually, at that time, I was in first year. He offered me a volunteer position in first year.
Oh, wow.
Which was crazy. I couldn't take it at the time because I had to work to pay for school. Mm-hmm. But, you know, at that point, I was like, I'm going to do my thesis with Gary. And the thing that he really taught me was sort of the, you know, further emphasizing the importance of hard work, but also more so emphasizing the importance of thinking about every single little thing you do. Mm-hmm. In the sense of, and this is something I try to teach in the lab, using a Schlenk line, for example. Looking at the mercury level, understanding why is it going up, why is it going down, why is it increasing at different rates. You know, sometimes we may just do something and we'll see a reaction and we'll be like, oh, it's just doing that because that's what it's supposed to do. It's like, well, why exactly is it doing that? And that's important for a few reasons. One, it teaches you, you know, if something goes wrong, you can sort of anticipate it. But two, you can sort of gauge from there what your sort of next step needs to be or if you need to fine-tune something. Again, it sort of really emphasizes independence and critical thinking. So I think it was those three people that helped me reach my full potential.
Okay.
I don't remember what the starting point of that question was, but here we are.
Yeah. To be honest, I'm not totally sure either.
Cool.
But we'll look back. Yeah. I'm sure you answered it.
Cool.
But yeah, no, you opened up a whole nother topic of discussion, which is – the importance of having good mentors in what you're doing.
Absolutely.
Especially in the sciences, like chemistry being one, physics. Mm-hmm. It's like a make it or break it subject where if you had a horrible teacher in high school or professor in first year, you're like, no, I'm done.
Yeah, that could totally put you off from pursuing a subject.
Yeah, it doesn't matter how interesting it is. Mm-hmm. But yeah, my teacher in high school, she taught like quantize energy by saying like a staircase. Mm-hmm. You can't be in between two different steps on a staircase.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, she, yeah, my mentor.
Yeah. Makes a huge difference.
And Jillian, mm-hmm. supervisor now. You talked about reaching your full potential, which mm-hmm. you've definitely done. Like to go from a student who mm-hmm. was, you know, not being awarded anything, mm-hmm. you know, in your elementary school. I mean, that can be really, I don't even know what the right word to say, but like it'll turn students away from even wanting to try in academics. Mm-hmm. If from a young age you're being compared to your peers, it's like, oh, I'm not smart enough. Mm-hmm. Or I'm, and it's not clear to you that you're not trying your hardest. Mm-hmm. Now for an intermission.
Brought to you by water.
What else do I ask you? I also want to address the point. So, like, we're in STEM. Mm-hmm. The only reason I think I'm in chemistry is because of my high school chemistry teacher, mm-hmm. who, like, blew my mind. I was like, oh, this subject is sick. And then mm-hmm. I got to university taking chemistry courses, and I was like, this is rough. These are hard.
Yeah.
Stuck through it, and I enjoy it. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, every student's going to experience that, even if they love the subject, mm-hmm. no matter what. It gets hard. Mm-hmm. That's just a matter of fact. Where was I going with this? Oh, yeah. A lot of people think, like, you have to take a very linear path in school mm-hmm. you know, if you want to make money. Mm-hmm. So if you want to be successful in terms of finances,
right.
start there. Yeah. Like being a doctor or a lawyer or getting mm-hmm. your PhD or anything like that. And where I come from, there's a lot of students who, you know, after high school, that was it because, you know, mm-hmm. school doesn't work for them. They don't do well sitting behind a desk all day. Mm-hmm. And people shouldn't have to do that.
That's fine. Yeah.
That's hard to do.
Yeah.
So can you talk about, like, career paths first? Not that you have too much experience.
Yeah.
So just your opinion.
Yeah.
So, like, for a student who might get to school – and then they start thinking, you know, this isn't for me. Or, you know, maybe I want to not do biology and I want to just go and become a gardener or something, you know. That's okay.
Yeah, that's like, totally fine.
Do it. You do it. Do what you enjoy mm-hmm. doing most. So, like, what would you recommend to those students? Because it's hard.
It is hard. I think also briefly touching on what you said for a second there. It may vary depending on where people come from. Like, that's sort true. Of like the city I come from, I think, I mean, I don't know what it was like for your high school, but I'm pretty sure a majority of the students that I went to high school with went to some post-secondary education afterwards.
Okay.
Now, I know quite a bit of them that did first year or second year and then they dropped out afterwards. Mm-hmm. Totally fine. There's no point in wasting money on a degree that you're not going to use or end up in a profession that you don't like. Mm-hmm. The other thing, too, it could also depend on your family. Like me personally, prior to me, there was nobody who had gone to university. So it's not like there was some sort of pressure to go to university, let alone a pressure to go into STEM, something that's sort of like academically challenging. Like that's something I wanted to do. That's something I wanted to pursue. So I do think it is important that you try to find what you are interested in. Now, I'm fortunate enough that I figured out what I liked when I was, what, 19, 20?
Yeah.
Some people may not figure out what they like till they're 30 or 40, which is fine.
Yeah, that's okay.
But I think it's important to pursue something that you actually enjoy because, man, I could not imagine working a job that I don't like. That seems terrible.
No, especially when you think about it. Like, I think about undergrads in particular who have the mindset, oh, I'm going to go and be a doctor. Or, you know, it's a huge mindset, and it's mm-hmm. probably brought on by, you know, the media being one mm-hmm. thing. Like, they portray like adult life in one way, and then you start to approach it, and you're like, oh, it's not as glorious as it seems.
Yeah.
So there's that, and then they also, like, Grey's Anatomy is an example, convinces people to be, you know, a doctor, mm-hmm. or, you know, there's a variety of different things, but I think that, like, undergrads in particular, you might decide, oh, I have to do this four-year undergrad, and then I can go mm-hmm. into med school. Mm-hmm. But while you're doing your four-year undergrad, you hate biology, or like you hate your anatomy classes, but you still do it.
Yeah.
Thinking like, oh, once I get to, you know, med school, I'm going to love it and I'm going to make money and I'm going to be happy.
Mm-hmm.
doesn't make any sense to me. And I think there's a lot of people who go down fields in that way and don't truly accept, like, I actually don't enjoy this and there's other ways that I can.
Yeah. Well, I think people may also fall into that path. What is it? The sunk cost fallacy of, like, they may get like 2 or 3 years into their degree and be like, man, I hate this. But they're like, shoot, I've already spent 2 or 3 years. I might as well finish it out. And it's like, that's tough. Again, I haven't been in that position. Because if you're like, man, I've already spent, you know, $30,000 on tuition and whatnot. I'm already 3 years in. I might as well just finish it off.
Yeah.
Like, that's got to be a tough position to be in.
Absolutely. So, yeah, I'm like you. I'm lucky that I stuck with chem and I love chemistry. But a lot of people, you know, don't get that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I know, like, when I was in second year phys chem, like, I was sitting in a tutorial and this guy, like, just random dude I was sitting beside, we were just chatting because I think we were doing the tutorial together. And, you know, he's, like, asked me, you know, what grade I was in and like, grade.
What grade? Yeah.
Grade two.
Grade.
Could have been. I knew. Yeah, anyways. and I asked him and he was in fourth year. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh, you're taking this? And he was like, I forget what program he said he was in, but he was finishing up his fourth year in some sort of STEM at Mac, and then he realized, like, in third year that he hated what he was doing. Yeah. So he's going back to U of T to get a degree in something completely unrelated. Yeah. You know, he's obviously fortunate enough to be able to do that.
Good for him.
Yeah, but I was like, at that point, I was like, mind blown.
Mm-hmm.
No part of me would ever want to even do another undergrad.
Yeah.
Not that there's anything wrong with
it. Yeah, that's totally fine.
It's a lot of work.
Mm-hmm.
It's grueling. That's stressful. I got gray hair now. Yeah.
Nice.
And I mean, we're at a school where, you know, it's a top school in Canada, which is great, but it's not like the number one school in the world where people are like pushing themselves.
Yeah.
Like, you know, there's some relaxed students here, which is healthy.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, so I can't imagine, you know, you go to, like, Harvard.
Yeah.
It's like, pump the brakes. Too much going on.
Yeah.
But, yeah, anyways, I had another question forming in my head.
Okay.
But I forget what it was.
Nice.
Do you have a question for yourself?
No.
Oh, darn.
I didn't know I was supposed to prepare. My bad.
Yeah, come on, Griff. Let's talk chemistry.
Let's do it.
Because I love chemistry.
Mm-hmm.
You love chemistry.
I do.
Let's dive into solving Schrodinger's wave function. Oh.
Where is the whiteboard?
No. It's a huge.
Sorry, the water bottle effect right in the microphone sounded hilarious. I hope that was picked up.
I realized when I was drinking. Okay. Okay, chemistry. For me, I love batteries.
Mm-hmm.
I'm in an electrochem group. It's pretty cool. I think it's pretty sick. For you, you love uranium.
Yeah.
Griffin works with uranium.
Sometimes, rarely.
Can I say that?
No.
No?
No, you can.
Okay.
Mainly titanium. And just transition metals.
No, but on our walls, I gotta talk to the camera.
Oh, right.
Look at our guests. Hello. Our, we share a floor with like the same door, but our labs are different.
Open concept.
Open
lab.
Concept. Yeah, which is insane to me.
It is insane.
Like, let's say you made a fire.
Yeah.
I had a lithium fire not too long ago.
Mm-hmm.
Well, no, it was a while ago, like a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
Like the stuff, let's say that started to spread.
Yes.
In our lab.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we keep all of our flammable stuff in flammable things.
True.
But you go like 3 feet away and you're like in your lab where you have uranium.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And
I mean, that would be fine actually.
Yeah, no,
but
I'm
it's all the other things. Yeah.
To explain, like you have a bunch of toxic stuff there.
Mm-hmm.
Crazy flammable stuff.
Yeah.
Can I like take a video of your lab and just.
Sure.
Put it in post. So there's an idea of what it looks like.
Sure.
It's insane.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean.
Yeah.
Sorry. Chemistry is sick.
I like it when people just make cool things. Like, I feel like there's a big trend in the literature where everything's got to have an application. It's got to be used for catalysis, small molecule activation. I love it when I see a paper come out and it's just like, here's a cool molecule. This is what it looks like. Here's how we synthesized it. Doesn't need to have a purpose. It's more so focused on the bonding or being like, you know, there was a precedent in the literature to be like, these things don't react or this thing's impossible. And it's like, well, we did the impossible, right? Yeah. I think that's also why I was so attracted to the noble gas chemistry, right? Because prior to the 60s, they were called inert.
Yeah.
So, you know, even saying that these things don't react and then someone was able to, you know, do all this chemistry with it, you know, that's the sort of stuff that I really like.
So, correct me if I'm wrong, but if I understand, like, Gary's work, it was mostly using, like, fluorine chemistry to somehow react that with noble gases and then make...
Yeah, I mean, he used fluorine for a whole bunch of things. But yeah, I mean, when you take the most reactive element, you can do funky things with it. Yeah.
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 I've been working with it a little.
Yeah?
Scares me.
Yeah?
Yeah. I'm afraid of HF. Oh. Like, terrified of it.
Understandable.
Like, I'm going to just inhale it one day and have no idea.
You would know if you inhaled it.
I just wouldn't wake up.
You would know right away if you inhaled it.
You said it like burns your...
Yeah, you would feel it. Yeah.
Yeah. I go to Griffin for insight on if I'm going to make something that will probably kill me.
You're good.
Because like our lab is mostly on method development and like using novel techniques to understand like new things. I don't know. In a nutshell, I can't really see. So we don't need to, you know, have Schlenk lines and huge,
right,
fancy. I mean, we have glove boxes and stuff, but that's just because we're dealing with lithium and stuff.
Right.
So yeah, I mean, it's like you need to consult with someone who knows their stuff, and you're just right there.
I'm right there.
And you know everything.
No, I know a thing or two, but
no, a good amount. Yeah. Yeah, I was having a full, like, I was about to have a panic attack when I thought I made HF one day. I was like, I was like calculating it. Like, starting with my mass, like, how much HF I could have made.
But you're here. You're here. You're hosting a podcast.
What's probably the most dangerous thing you work with?
Currently or ever?
Mm, say ever.
Well, I mean, there's, like...
Like, anything in a large amount is dangerous.
True, but also things could be dangerous for a variety of reasons. Like, you could have things that are dangerous because they detonate. Right? Like, especially if you're, like, when I was doing my thesis, like, when you're working with high oxidation state compounds.
Don't stop. Okay.
You know, the first thing that I made in my undergraduate thesis was bromyl fluoride. So BrO2F. So that's bromine in the +5 oxidation state. Now, prior report for the synthesis of that compound said it detonated above negative 10 degrees.
Oh.
And it's like, oh, nice. That's the first thing we're making.
You did this as a fourth year undergrad?
I mean, I had a graduate student there helping. yeah, but it's like, you know, it didn't detonate it.
That's good.
Yes. But, you know, it's things like that. Or also, you know, at one point we were working with xenon hexafluoride. Okay. Now, when you react xenon hexafluoride with water, you get xenon trioxide, which is shock sensitive. So if you, it explodes.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. So, again, we never saw an instance of that, but it's also, you know, that's more of a potential thing, right? So those are things that are dangerous because they could explode.
Yeah. What about bromine because it's bromine? Oh, no.
No.
That's won't. I'm thinking beryllium.
Oh, beryllium's super toxic.
Different elements.
Now, that's the other end of sort of dangerous things is working with toxic things. I've worked with tin compounds, thallium compounds. Truthfully, the toxic compounds don't really worry me because I'm confident in my lab skills and I know if I'm working the way I do, which is diligently thinking about every single little thing I do, I'm not worried of like, oh, did I get some, you know, tetramethyl tin on me? Like that's I'm not even worried about it because I know how I set up reactions, how I clean reactions. But, you know, if something detonates, it doesn't. You know, sometimes it doesn't matter how careful you are. Sometimes something just detonates, right? So a compound that I made recently is the trispentafluorophenyl alane. So that's an aluminum center.
That's a big one.
So imagine an aluminum center.
I'm going to draw this out on ChemDraw.
And then, put it in post?
Like, snap it in.
So that compound, so three pentafluorophenyl rings around aluminum,
okay,
has been reported in the literature to detonate. But that's like a compound I work with all the time. Like, it's a great reagent to use. It's a great Lewis acid. But again, you know, if you treat the chemistry with respect, you don't have to worry as much. And if you think of, again, this goes back to the point earlier. If you think about every single step you do and you think about why you're doing it, you know, why am I doing this? You know, what am I looking for here? How can I tell if something's going to go wrong? Mm-hmm. You don't have to worry when you're in the lab. In a sort of ironic way, the lab is my safe place.
Your safe haven?
Like, yeah. Because, like, I'm a huge overthinker, right?
Okay.
But you can't be with your own thoughts in the lab because you got to be focused on what you're doing. maybe you. I don't know.
I'm
setting up a reaction, like, every single thing I'm thinking about is that reaction. And it just clears everything else out of the way. So it's great. Like, I have no problem.
You should try golfing.
Yeah?
That's what happens when you golf.
Oh, you get like a sort of zen.
Like a millisecond of just pure bliss.
Okay.
When you hit the ball.
Okay.
Sorry, we're talking about chemistry. That's why I like golf.
Okay.
Anyways, yeah. Well, that's sick. I was going to say something insightful. Damn. I swear after COVID, it affected my brain.
No, I get it.
No, but like actually, brain fog is real. I will say, and I think I don't have any stats for this, so I can't. This is personal opinion. I think the most dangerous chemistry happens in undergrad research and in high school.
Okay.
And that's just because, not dangerous as in, you know, toxicity, but dangerous in hurting yourself mm-hmm. by making a mistake
mm-hmm.
that could be avoided.
Okay.
One example, I'm going to talk about something that happened to me in high school.
Okay.
Okay, so on my spare in high school, in grade 12, I would spend my spare period in my chemistry teacher's lab,
mm-hmm.
like her classroom. Like, she would be teaching a class, and then I'd be in the back like a little mad scientist, like mixing water and something.
In salt,
yeah. You know, like setting up her demos and
you're
stuff.
You're crazy.
Wild stuff. And it was like a crazy experience. Well, it was fun. I loved every moment of it
mm-hmm.
and definitely piqued my interest in chemistry.
Mm.
But then there was one day where grade 12, so like I had fast tracked chem. So mm-hmm. I took it a year earlier. And so some students who like were my peers, but I wasn't in the class with them, got a stopper stuck in a test tube,
uh-huh.
like jammed in this test tube. And there was some sort of organic acid of some kind. Did I tell you this?
No, but I know where this is going.
So like my teacher and I both were like, you know, just like heat it up a little bit.
A little bit, yeah.
And like pop out the stopper. Uh-huh. Smart idea.
Yeah.
You know? So, I mean, we could have heated it with like water. Put it in some hot water.
Yeah. What'd you do? Bunsen burner? Yeah. You're crazy.
Right on a flame. So I'm like, she's actually insane. I wish it was videoed. So she's like teaching her class, which at this point was a grade 12 college chemistry.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm at the back like, of the room, like behind the lab benches. Like I was open Bunsen burner flame, like holding this test tube with like some, I don't know, test tube
uh-huh.
clamp. Just like put it over the flame and then immediately it starts to boil. Like mm-hmm. I could feel it boiling and I was mm-hmm. like, oh,
teacher.
No, I pull it off. And I was like, that boiled quick.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know what was the solution. I put it back on because I'm like, oh, it must be close to bomb in the lab. Put it back on immediately. Just boom.
Yeah.
Explodes right in my face.
Yeah.
Everything that was in the test tube fell on the flame.
Yeah.
So that immediately blew up. The test tube completely shattered. Like there was it was unrecoverable.
Yeah.
Like the glass was micro-sized particles. And all I remember hearing was the stopper hit a window.
Yeah.
It was like doing.
Yeah.
My friend was also in this class like that was being taught and mm-hmm. she turned around cuz she was watching me do whatever. She turns around, she was like, there was Emma, and then there was just smoke. I was enveloped by whatever this smoke was. It was absurd, but a lot of fun. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
My teacher was terrible.
Yeah.
That's like, okay, though. Oh, my God, I'm going
to
lose.
But you got to learn something.
I did learn.
And now you're a TA.
But I think that's could have been avoided.
Yeah, well, that brings up a good point. I feel like a lot of the – most of the accidents probably happen for the little things.
Yeah.
Like needle pokes, people touching hot plates, things like that. Like it's when you're spaced out for a second.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's been some – you would think that, you know, third, fourth year students would be pretty good in the lab, but
– it happens.
There's a lot of mistakes that still occur.
It happens.
Yeah. Have you had a dangerous incident?
The only injury I ever had was when a vial sort of exploded on me.
Is this – this isn't what just happened with the –
No, this was a while ago. Now, it was – I don't know if the vial had been pressurized with something or if it was under vacuum somehow. Pretty much I was just moving it and it sort of dinked – you know the bottom of the fume hood, how it's got that little edge that comes out? It dinked that and then it exploded or imploded right in my hand. So that's what that scar is for.
Scarred you.
Yeah, that was shocking, and I remember looking at my hands, being like, "Oh, because it just totally went."
And you don't know what was in it.
Yeah, no idea.
That's nice.
We made it, but I remember looking at my hands, being like, "Oh wow, nothing happened." But then, as I turned my hand upside down, all the blood came out. Now the problem is the building that it happened in. Alternated floors between men's washroom, women's washroom.
What building is this? MRB?
No. This was in Toronto.
Oh,
yeah.
I'm pretty sure that building has
yeah.
I was like, why would you be in there? But I'm pretty sure that.
So it initially was an all male building.
Oh.
Right?
Okay.
Back in the day.
Misogyny.
Yeah. But then the problem was I needed to get down one floor to make it to the bathroom to wash my hand. And I went down a couple stairs being like, oh, I'm good. And then I felt so – because my hand was bleeding like crazy. The cut went really deep. And I was like, oh, my goodness. How am I going to make it to the bathroom? I made it, though.
Your vision was black.
It was blurry. But then once I rinsed it, I actually – I worked for probably 3 or 4 more hours after that.
I remember you.
Yeah, because I taped it up because I had an experiment I needed to do.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Looking back on it, I should have gone to the hospital immediately.
Oh, yeah.
But I got stitches and stuff like that happens. But again, that's why working, keep a safe, clean lab space. Because it's not just you there, right? Because that wasn't my vial. That was somebody else's thing.
Right.
Now, granted, it was years ago. I've totally let it go.
Have you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But again, it's you need to watch out for your own safety, but also for the safety of others.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that's an important thing.
I mean, I had the issue in my lab. Like I said, I had a lithium fire.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's scary because you can't put it out.
Right.
And it just keeps going. And it was right beside a whole bunch of organic solvents. I wasn't expecting a fire to happen.
Mm.
But it was half my fault.
Okay.
I hope Jillian doesn't hear this.
We will cut this in post.
But so basically, I was disassembling a battery, and I had a purely, fully lithiated anode. It was at the top of charge, so all of the lithium ions had gone into the anode structure.
Mm-hmm.
And because it was an older cell, it had been cycled a few times, the lithium wasn't going into the graphite structure.
Okay.
So really, when I took this battery apart, I was looking at pure lithium on top of graphite.
Got it.
So, I should have quenched it, which is something that we do regularly. But I was like, oh, I don't ever think much of it. So I put it in the lithium waste bin. But someone, could have been me, I don't think it was me, put a Kim wipe in the bin.
Mm.
Girl. Griffin. That caught on fire so fast.
Oh, for sure, Yeah.
Instantly.
Yeah.
And then the whole lithium bin just went poof, and I was like, holy shit, what do I do?
Yeah.
I was freaking out and then I called Kevin and he was
See that's another reason. If you ever need to do dangerous chemistry, always have other people around.
Yeah, never work alone. Mm-hmm. It's like the number one rule.
Yeah.
Also, don't chew gum and don't.
No, never.
Wear shorts.
Yeah, that would be very bad.
Yeah.
Do you do those things?
No. I mean, sometimes I wear like caprese pants.
Caprese's?
No, like capris.
Okay.
You know what that is?
Yes.
I'm trying to say like caprese-ish pants.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Cool.
You know, and I was like, oh, hopefully Terry doesn't.
Yeah.
Cut that one out.
Yeah. Sorry, T.
Oopsies. Yeah. Anyways, I think this has been a pretty eventful discussion.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you for coming on.
Thank you for having me. I'm very excited to see where this goes. You have a good podcast speaking voice.
Do I?
It sounds a little different on the headphones. Yeah.
It does. I can hear it.
Yeah, yeah. So I can, like, you were doing the intro, and I could picture you doing, like, a sponsorship, like, this episode is brought to you by, I was like, damn. So, yeah, you should do audiobooks.
I've always been self-conscious of my voice.
Why?
Because it's always been, like, a baby voice.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I don't think it's a baby voice, but.
Appreciate it.
Yeah.
I've even quit a job over my
What?
Voice. Yeah. Because I caught, like, the, I won't out the business.
Uh-huh.
It doesn't take much to figure out where I was working.
Right.
But yeah, my manager, no, I was like walking up the stairs one day and the one girl was like, I was like 16.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to make it in the world at that age, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And this one girl, she was like older than me. She's like, Emma has the voice of a 12-year-old boy. I heard her say that. And I was so hurt. I was like, what do you mean I have a voice of a 12-year-old boy?
Yeah.
And then I went down that same day to answer the phone.
Mm-hmm.
This is so petty. Okay, I was young.
That's okay.
It's not petty. It really hurt.
That's okay.
I went down the stairs that same day to answer the phone.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, screw all these people. I can talk just fine.
Mm-hmm.
So I pick up the phone because someone was calling.
Mm-hmm.
This was like a little grocery store place.
You're out in the business.
I'm out in the business.
Throw it up on screen.
This was once it got like I worked there with old owners and then it got sold to new owners.
Okay.
And it was the, like 2 weeks I worked with the new owners that all of this unfolded.
Oh, so I see.
The old owners are, love them. Greatest people in the world.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I go in and get this phone and the lady who was working as the butcher, the meat lady.
Yeah.
She was like, she tried to take the phone from me. And I was like, no. I got it. Let me answer this phone.
Yeah.
And then she's like, fine, if you're going to talk, speak with your manager type voice. And I was like, oh, what do you mean?
Mm-hmm.
So then I like finished talking to this guy and then we hung up. And then she's like, we got a complaint from another customer that they couldn't understand you.
Oh, come on, man.
So hurt.
Aww.
And I was like, I'm not spending my summer with this. So then I quit and I found a different job.
There you go.
That I really enjoyed.
Now you're running a podcast.
Yeah. Who would have thought?
Who would have thought?
Not 16-year-old Emma, that's for sure.
Yeah.
That was off topic.
That was chemically speaking.
Chemically speaking. Pretty sick logo.
That's awesome.
Designed it myself.
Did you actually?
Well, AI helped me a little bit.
Designed it myself.
I think chat GPT.
There you go.
Yeah. Stay tuned. Bye. Is that it?
Yeah.
Can you say bye?
Goodbye.
That was good. Okay, I gotta stop talking. Cool.